Welcome to Mobile Active, and thank you for coming here. I know that Dan Rather is just as tempting, but we hope that this is an interesting panel as well. The topic is Mobile Active, and the idea behind it, of course, is using and case studies and ideas around using cell phones for political, nonprofit, as well as any sort of mobilizing type of feature. We'll be covering everything here from, as I said, nonprofits to mobile social networking and whatnot and everything in between. My name is Justin Oberman. I am a mobile evangelist at Rave Wireless, and I also blog for mopocket.com, and I'm the mobile political writer for another publication called Personal Democracy Forum. One thing that I would like to do, actually, I'm really excited about this panel, and I'm going to let the panelists sort of introduce themselves. I'm really glad that I got all this giant brain trust together here. And I have a lot of questions to ask them, but hopefully I won't be able to get through all of them, because hopefully they'll just be talking to each other and talking to you. We have a microphone set up there, and it's preferable to go online there because this is going to be podcasted later. And one thing that I would like you to do right now, actually, is a little bit of a little social experiment I like to do before, usually when I talk about mobile phones and political usages. I would like everyone just to take out their cell phone for a second. Panelists, you too. Everyone have it out? All right. Hand it to the person next to you, to the left.
Jane Lee, what's
too bad.
She pissed again?
This could be embarrassing.
Does everyone have somebody else's cell phone? Everyone? All right. Now, only with the permission of the person next to you, send a text message to yourself. You have 20 seconds. Raise your hand when you're done.
You can do whatever you want.
Ten, 9, 8, 7,
why did someone have
6,
to
5, 4,
isn't that a cute
3, 2, 1, wow. Oh, we got one.
I sent one to
Wow, an entire
Dana.
Room of geeks, and no one can send a text message using somebody else's cell phone. No, but there's an important lesson in that, right? I mean, there's a lot of hurdles that we have in mobile technology, right? There's a lot of fragmentation and a lot of issues, and that's one of the things that hopefully we'll be discussing today. So let's get to the panel. Let's start from right to left. My right to the left. Each of the panelists are going to introduce themselves for 5 minutes. And then we'll start up with just a nice, interesting discourse. Julie?
Hi, I'm Julie Barco of Germany. I'm the Deputy Director of the Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet. It's a think tank at the George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management. So it's basically like the longest title in the world. But we look at the intersection of good governance and smart politicking and technology. About 2 years ago, we released a publication called Politics to Go, which was the first publication at its time that looked at how political groups and campaigns and nonprofits and advocacy groups were using mobile technology around the world. A little bit's changed in the past 2 years. A lot's going on. That brings us up to the present right now. Are we just doing introductions, or are we going to keep talking?
No, just introductions.
Okay.
Well, following after Julie, I always feel like I have to have Supreme Allied Commander in my title. Name is Doug Busk. I am the Vice President for Industry Relations at SinglePoint. SinglePoint is a connection aggregator. What that means is essentially we're an interface between companies, developers like yourselves that want to connect to carriers to send text messages, premium messages, ringtones, wallpaper, and a lot of the applications that we'll talk about later on today. So we are a basically a connection between application providers and the carriers.
Hi, my name is Ben Rigby. I think I might go a little longer, use my 5 minutes. And if you could start with the movie we've got queued up.
Sure.
My organization is called Mobile Voter, and I founded the organization to mobilize young people for political action using mobile technology. And this is a clip from one of our campaigns.
Hey, everybody! This is WWE superstar John Cena reminding you that 2006 is a very important election year.
Complete black
now,
screen.
We have made registering to vote.
Okay,
as
what you're
easy
watching right now is
WWE
a pro wrestler.
Into your mobile
doing
phone.
A promo for our
that's right.
text to register to
just
vote
text
technology.
WWE to the number 75444 on your mobile phone to get the process started.
Being able to vote is your right. Don't give
okay,
it up.
Okay, so imagine big, bulky guys going.
Serious Hulkamania.
Register to vote.
Serious.
So that came from our campaign this summer. And since we're in Texas, I thought I'd introduce myself by way of an analogy to oil. And that is, the analogy is that in Colorado, there is approximately three times as much oil as in Saudi Arabia, but it's trapped in this, oil shale. And in order to access it, Shell Oil Company is submerging, hundreds of little tiny heaters to heat up the oil shale and building a giant ice wall around this area so that the oil doesn't seep into the water table. Obviously, with that much oil, the results of these experiments could change the balance of geopolitical power. And in the world of politics, there is another great untapped resource, and that is the youth vote. And it has been kind of seemingly as difficult to tap as this great mass of oil under the Colorado Rockies, but just as important in that whoever wins the youth vote in various elections could kind of change the balance of power in the U.S., and we thought we had the answer in text messaging in 2004. We started our organization. We thought text messaging is the drill that will reach down into the youth vote and mobilize them. It's pretty much their native tongue. It's the way that young people communicate with each other. They don't send email. They use MySpace messaging and text messaging. And we started this campaign. We got people like the pro wrestlers to get up on stage, on their websites and say, text me to register to vote. Unfortunately, our results were rather poor. This summer, we had about 7 million, we calculate, impressions of people like the wrestlers who got in front of young people and said, text me to register to vote. And out of those 7 million, we had about 4,000 people who responded. So it was a tremendously low response rate. And we have a bunch of ideas why it was so low, and we can talk about it in the rest of the panel. Primarily we discovered this summer that the web still works as a great way to reach out to young people, and text messaging is still very incipient. And that there are a lot of, challenges and barriers to kind of reaching out to young people, recruiting them, and providing a service that allows them to communicate with each other in the context of something like political action.
Jed?
My name is Jed Alpert, and I founded a company called Rights Group, which is going through the uncomfortable transition of changing its name. So we're now known as M Commons or Mobile Commons. What we've done is we built a platform that allows all different kinds of organizations to incorporate mobile messaging into their communications on using a web-based application that integrates very, very cleanly with other databases so that any kind of organization and the kinds of customers that we have range from large organizations like the NRDC to smaller organizations or smaller local organizations or small union efforts and that kind of thing to manage completely all of their text messaging in really three key ways. One is to allow people to opt in the way Ben was describing based on some kind of call to action in other media and then engage really in a mobile conversation with them. The other way is to incorporate voice into the technology so that a phone number can be incorporated in an incoming text message to someone's mobile phone, and that phone number will be automatically directed to the appropriate recipient. And then the third area where we've also been getting a lot of traction is in mobile search, so that organizations can set up their own, using our platform, you can set up their own mobile search campaigns. For example, one organization is using it to make people aware of local pollution levels in their neighborhood, so that if you text in your zip code, you'll get in real time the results of a mobile search onto your the results of what the pollution data is in your neighborhood based on texting in your zip code. And there's obviously all different kinds of applications that that's good for. So really, it's creating a simple to use platform that allows people that allows people to incorporate text messaging into everything that they're doing has been at times very successful and sometimes less successful for the organizations, really depending on what the campaigns and the calls to action are. But for things like massive calling campaigns to congressmen or senators, it's been very, very successful. And and other applications like that, or else calls to action at events where people are using mobile technology to sign petitions or to gain emails. Those are also areas where it's been quite successful.
Thanks, Jed. Roger?
Hi, so I'm Roger Desai. I run a company called Rave Wireless. And I'll ask two questions to start off. Can you guys hear me? Okay. So I'll ask two quick questions just to get the temperature of what you guys think about. So how many people are here to learn how to leverage the mobile phone for things like activism or applications? So you want to raise your hands? Okay, it's about half of you. A tougher question is, how many here would consider their phone more valuable if you had to lose one of two things, your PC or your phone? How many people would find their phone more valuable than the PC? Okay. So, like, you know, a lot less. And when I asked that second question of, you know, you guys are pretty advanced, you know, technical kind of a set of people, but you ask other people kind of in kind of common, you know, everyday people, you know, the majority raised their hand about the cell phone. And it's interesting how people in this room are, you know, part of the future of what the phone can be, but yet, you know, but yet don't believe in the promise of it because, you know, so many people have tried and nothing's happened to date that's exciting on the phone. The flip side is the public actually feels like the phone is more valuable. It's the primary tool that they plan and organize their lives with. And so, you know, a lot of us that have been wireless for a long time, you know, are really frustrated by how there isn't any, like, easy, fun things you could do on a phone without having to talk to a carrier, without having to pay a lot of money. And so I'll just explain what we do. One of my first experiences in mobile was I worked with Grameen Bank about 8 years ago, where we gave villagers cell phones through a loan, and they made them kind of their village phone, and they became the mobile operator of the village. And the funny thing at the time was, at that time, no one believed in the power of the cell phone. So the World Bank kind of laughed at us and said, these people don't know what a phone number is, they have no one to call, you know, don't bother. And, you know, now it's in 192,000 villages, and it's a great, you know, within 3 months, people are able to pay back their loan for the cell phone. So it's an amazing, you know, transition from 10 years ago where this thing didn't really exist to now half the planet will carry one. You know, so I think we all know the power of it, and the question is, you know, how does everyone in this room take advantage of the power and create, you know, innovation on top of it? So we work at Rave with college campuses. We feel like they are the future in some ways. We feel like they are teaching their parents, or, you know, they become the adults and what this thing can mean and how valuable it is. And the notion of how you work with carriers, we just went around them. You know, so our kind of story today will be about how we went around carriers and created our own marketplace for what these phones can do. So, you know, we'll be at 70 universities this year. We're about 2.5 years old. What we essentially do is we replace the entire kind of thing you see on the phone with our applications. And those applications leverage location-based technology. There's an application for safety. There's an application for social networking in terms of sharing your location and presence. There's even applications that the school can launch, like tracking their buses on campus. You can see them moving on little maps. But the main power for people like yourselves is that it'll be a platform that anyone can develop off of. And we'll create a marketplace where the app can not only be used at that university, but any other university that Rave is launched at in the U.S. And we'll actually make available things that carriers don't make available very easily, like location. So you can, you know, get a location API from us if you want to launch an application, let's say, University of North Carolina. You know, most of the school will be carrying one of our phones. And that's an opportunity for, you're not going to be able to experiment with the masses, but if you want to experiment with the future, you know, on college campuses, you know, Rave Wireless is a place to turn to for that.
Thank you, Roger. So now we have a couple questions, and also if people want to start lining up for questions as well, I'm sure everyone, a lot of people have them. Usually in this space they do. But I also want you to be aware that there'll be a couple special announcements made at the end of this by some of the people on the panel, and also all of you will be invited to a party tonight at 8 o'clock. From 8 to 12 at Karma, and the instructions for that will be given soon. But the first question I have is for Julie, who actually has been tracing for the longest time the way that mobile has been used all over the world, and has seen it from organic examples to planned examples. My question to you, Julie, is, you know, we have the examples of one of the most well-known is the People Power demonstration in the Philippines, where it said that a text messaging overthrew a president. Where do we go from there, that a completely organic example where text messaging is huge in the Philippines, to the United States, where text messaging is not as organic, and trying to develop a mobile campaign?
Sure. That's actually a good question. When we think about how mobile technology is being used to empower people, and how it's being used in the democratic space and the political space, oftentimes the best examples come from outside the U.S. They certainly come from the Philippines. They come from South Korea. They come from Spain. These are movements where it seems like just at the touch of a button and one text message being sent, we've mobilized hundreds of thousands of people. Now, that's not always the case. Some of these movements have been strategically designed to appear organic, but many of them actually were organic. And why doesn't that work in the U.S.? Why haven't we heard about a movement in the U.S. where hundreds of thousands of people gathered in one place at the touch of a button and with one SMS message? I think it all comes down to how we use it and how we look at text messaging. There are different cultural differences. Justin's by far the best person in the world to talk to about that. But I think it comes down to several things. The first thing is that SMS is not like email. And right now we have a lot of political groups and advocacy groups, bless their hearts, they're still looking at SMS as a way to send people information just like email. In fact, there's a direct quote from in an article that I read the other day where a political consultant was asked, "How are you using SMS?" And he replied, "We're using it as an extension of email." Now, how many of you have received a piece of political email ever from a candidate or from an advocacy group? Raise your hand, because I get them all the time as part of my job. How many of you respond to that email? Have you donated or forwarded it? Okay, a few less. Now, how many of you have received the equivalent of a political email message on your cell phone? How many of you want to receive the equivalent of political email on your cell phone? See, very interesting. Mobile technology is an incredibly powerful tool if you have a number of things. The first is a call to action, something that ties not just into the mobile technology or the technology sphere, but to the real world. And the second thing you need is you need people who are motivated, sometimes desperate, and passionate enough to take that action.
Thank you, Julie. Anyone else have a comment on that?
Or? Yeah, we just had an interesting story from this summer where we worked with the immigration rallies, and we were trying to get people fired up by text message, you know, and we had a speaker go up there, and they had to, the thing they had to say was text VOTA to 75444, and they went up there and they said, okay, everybody, you know, I got everyone real excited, and they said, text si se puede to 75444, and, you know, our system was expecting a keyword that, you know, and people would respond via that keyword, and it didn't work because the incorrect message was said at the stage. But it just shows that people are, the technology is still very unfamiliar to so many people, and especially when you talk about sending keywords that have to be in an almost exact form to be recognized, there's still a lot. It's still just very very inchoate at this point.
A follow-up to Julie's question. How many people wouldn't mind receiving political information that was pertinent to that moment, to that moment, on their cell phone? Okay.
I mean, I think that really brings up an important point, which is the reason why it makes us all crazy when someone says that that SMS is an extension of emails, because they're two totally completely different things. And what we found really, really works is when someone is getting a message on their cell phone that asks for a call to action that has a relevance and immediacy to that moment. For example, calling a congressperson at that moment will make a difference, not having this piece of information stored away in your brain for a later action. That's fine. So one of the most important things about any mobile campaign is that all the media around a mobile campaign, or certainly at the beginning of a mobile campaign, exists first not on a mobile phone. It exists at someone on a stage saying text in this word to be a part of something, or in a printed piece of media, or in an email, or anywhere else. But because it's a medium that requires that people opt in to join, they have to learn about it somewhere else. And it's very, very important that what's communicated to that person in order to opt in is that you're going to be getting messages that are relevant to the moment and require an immediate call to action, or it's going to sort of annoy you and you'll quit the program. And in formulating any kind of separate mobile strategy, it's very, very important that it really take advantage of what's most important about a mobile phone, is that exact immediacy about it.
Yeah, the importance of immediacy and personalization can't be overstated with mobile. I mean, the thing I like to say to clients is that the need for personalization and relevancy is directly proportional to that object's proximity to your target. And there's no medium closer to any consumer target, whether it's politics or nonprofit, than a mobile device. It's literally on them. So they're going to be highly offended. It's not relevant. They're typically paying for it in many of the instances, which sort of ramps up the offense factor. People will get all sorts of catalogs at home every day in hard copy mail and not care. People will get all sorts of spam every minute. We're all getting spam right now and not get ticked about it. But if a message comes in that's inappropriate or even unsolicited, people will lose their minds. And most of us have buckets of, you know, thousands of messages, 500 messages. I mean, are you really getting, that screwed out of, 15 cents? But it's because it's personal to you. It's an object that you carry with you.
Even an appropriate message sent at the wrong time. Even an opt-in, I care enough about issue X or candidate Y that I want to receive, be a part of your mobile campaign. And oops, I got a message at 3 a.m. this morning and it woke me up.
And another point I'd like to bring up is on the call to action. I mean, the power of the call to action and how appropriate that call to action is, can't be overstated as well. I mean, if you want to see examples of this, if you can bear it, live through some reality TV and game show TV in primetime. Watch Deal or No Deal and see that they dedicate 3 minutes of a, 22-minute show to their sweepstakes on that show. We do a lot of these interactive television events. And the most effective ones, I can tell you, American Idol's running a program now on Thursdays as well on their show, have a very clear call to action. It's exciting, it's immediate, and it's relevant. And the people participating in it, and by the way, this is the fastest growing segment of what we call off-net or off-deck content. It did about $100 million gross last year, we estimate, is, in these reality shows, they're 99 cents a vote. They're $1.99 an entry. So these are people proactively entering what are effectively sweepstakes, nationwide sweepstakes, to feel like they're tied into the show. So that's a wonderful place to look for effective, calls to action. It's not directly relevant to, politics or nonprofit, but it is at the end of the day, a lesson to learn as far as smart calls to action that excite people and offer some form of immediacy.
Well, Doug, you worked in the carrier space for a while, and now you work for an aggregator, and I'll let you explain what an aggregator is and why they're so essential. But when you were working both before and after with the carriers, what is the carrier's attitude towards nonprofits and political campaigns?
Well, first I'll start with the carrier's attitude towards aggregators. I have two examples I use. There's about a dozen to a dozen and a half companies that do what we do in the United States. There's about half a dozen that are connected to every single carrier that makes this capability available. And we're one of that group. What I like to say is, we're lifeguards at the country club pool, and the country club is owned by the carriers. So there's no running around the pool. There's no diving in the shallow end. We monitor all the applications that go through our pipe and are connected to the carriers, and we are contracted with the carriers to ensure that those applications meet certain standards. The number one set of standards out there, and this is publicly available, is the Consumer Best Practices by the Mobile Marketing Association. Go to mmaglobal.com. I'm on the board of that organization, and we have drafted, we're now in our third version of the Consumer Best Practices. They literally spell out exactly how to gain someone's permission to receive a text message, to ensure that your application allows them to stop from receiving a text message. You know, so those are the rules of the pool, so to speak. That's the good metaphor. the other way of looking at it is sort of my Lieutenant Jessup metaphor from A Few Good Men. The aggregators are in the role of Lieutenant Jessup in the movie, if you remember it, where essentially he's being challenged, you know, did you do this? Did you do this? And he says, well, you know, deep down in places you don't talk about in parties, you need me on that wall. You want me on that wall. That is, at the end of the day, the role of the aggregator as far as the carriers are concerned. So in some ways, we're a necessary evil. In other ways, we ensure that the carrier and their subscribers are protected. So, you know, it's a middleman's position in the business, and that's really, you know, what we do. When it comes to carriers, and their interest in nonprofit applications and political activism over mobile, they've been increasingly open to it. And there have been some signs that the holy grail, so to speak, of nonprofit, which is fundraising via your phone. You know, taking that example I did earlier of a Deal or No Deal premium message where you could literally send in a message and have $5 worth of donation charged to your cell phone bill is really the ultimate tool that a lot of us have been waiting for. There has been some progress in this. I was lucky enough to be a part of a team at Verizon that enabled a cross-carrier effort for Katrina relief, and prior to that, tsunami relief. That benefited CARE and the Red Cross. The CTIA, which is the industry's organization, the industry's lobbying group, sort of adopted that Red Cross example. And now the Red Cross short code is enabled across all carriers. And the Red Cross has made it official that moving forward, the next time there is one of these, you know, horrible events, you hope it won't happen, but it will happen again inevitably. They will run with the 1-800 number on TV Chiron. They're going to run their short code so that wherever you are, you can take action. And I think that's the, in my mind, that's the ultimate example of the power of mobile, that you can give and you can be a part of a community wherever you are at that moment in time. You don't have to wait until you get back to your computer. You don't have to make a pledge. You don't have to fill out some card. You just pull out your phone and you can donate $5, $10, $100 right there.
I think a lot of people want that. I mean, who wouldn't want that at a political event or a rally to have people donate right away? But when I talk to people involved in politics and advocacy, Doug, they're confused and overwhelmed.
Sure.
They don't understand how the system works, and they don't understand why, for example, for every $10 they raise, five of it goes to other people.
Yeah, let's talk about the revenue share. Yeah, the carriers in the off-net world, ringtones, wallpaper, chat, personalization. How many people here have, by the way, developed a mobile application over messaging? Okay, so how many of you were unhappy with how much revenue the carriers took? Okay, nearly 100 out of 100.
I'd be mad.
Yeah, carriers charge a fee for that privilege to use their networks to bill. And it's usually somewhere between 30 and 50%, depending on the object price. So of a dollar vote in Deal or No Deal, you can expect that, you know, about half of it would go to the carrier. Now, their thinking on this is not simply the billing capability, which is quite unique and really unusual. You can't get it any other way. You have to work with a carrier if you're going to bill via their billing system, right? Is also the fact that when a customer has a problem with a charge, it doesn't matter whether that charge was a political campaign or was Deal or No Deal or was American Idol. Who are they calling? They're calling the carrier. And that costs money. That costs $5 to $15 per call. So, you know, from the carrier perspective, that's always going to be their automatic justification for charging that much. Now, in the case of the Red Cross example, CTIA has worked out a deal where the disproportionate share, if not all, of the value of those donations go directly from the carrier. If you donate $5, $5 will go to the Red Cross. So that is at least a start towards first nonprofit and then political donation, which obviously has, as you know, a different set of rules binding it. So the hope is that this will open up the doors a little bit and enable the type of fundraising and donation we'd all like to see in the space.
Well, none of this is possible if you don't create the what you talked about before, the groups and the social networks sort of to get involved in this. And I was wondering, Roger, with your experience with the Grameen and with your experience with college campuses, if you could speak a little bit about, you know, what makes, how to make a mobile social network click, and in the end, why that's so, why a mobile social network is so important for a political cause, or you imagine it might be.
So I think, yeah, one thing that's maybe frustrating about this conversation is that there's a lot, you know, we can talk about the challenges for a long time. At the same time, as I alluded to before, that the opportunity is pretty amazing in the sense that, you know, half the planet will have one of these devices. And, you know, other than the West and kind of places like the U.S. and Western Europe, it's the only device that they'll have. They won't have a PC. And so, you know, what I think the things to remember about how a phone is used is where people usually make their first mistake. It's mainly a communication tool. I mean, you basically use, I mean, most people in the U.S. are calling 80% of the time calling 25 people within 25 miles of themselves, and they're paying almost $1,000 a year to do so. So it's amazing how much, you know, how much of value we place in just communicating with people we already know. And the question is, how do you extend that to people you don't know? You know, so, you know, in the sense of like, you know, in our college experiences, there's a lot of kind of things around, you know, meeting people in a smart mob like fashion. Like, let's say you wanted to pick up basketball. Obviously, the phone is a perfect tool for that. If you post that on MySpace, your friends might not see that till the next day. And even then, you know, people you don't know that are not on your address book wouldn't see that. So, you know, group kind of functionality is really useful around, you know, kind of trying to meet at the moment, that call to action saying, hey, I'm about to play, you know, I got three guys about to play basketball. Who else wants to join us? And, you know, and suddenly it's people that you don't even know appear on the field. Right? That's pretty powerful. But the key tenets about that, it's coming from other humans. And they're trying to communicate with you and people that, you know, are within your community that may not know you, you know, but you have some kind of transaction. So even from a kind of a Craigslist model of, you know, buying, selling, trading, swapping, you know, things with people within your community, the phone is great for things like that. And that can be used for whatever it may be. It could be used for a political cause, it could be used for a basketball game, it could be used because you have two extra tickets to something. But it's coming from a human, which means that that person is at least making it more relevant than it came from, if it came from a machine. And so, you know, I guess that's the one big takeaway is that at the end, it's about people trying to talk to another, and you have to really look at it from that point of view. So I would actually ask Ben about the voting experience. One question I would have around that is, if your project was about trying to get people to register to vote, was it really a technical issue that the phone kind of overcame, or do these people, you know, it's not like they just didn't really want to vote? I mean, did the phone really matter in that case?
We didn't actually even get to any of the our main barrier to entry was getting the person to text in to begin with. Yeah. So, you know, you could relate it to wanting to register to vote. What we discovered was that it actually has a lot to do with timeliness. Within 2 weeks of the registration deadlines, the usage shot way, way up on our website and on the phone. The problem is within 2 weeks of the deadline, we had a difficult time sending out registration forms to the end user, to the new voter. So there was a, you know, there's a time lag that made it kind of hard to do. But I don't, there's often this kind of, saying this myth out there that young people are apathetic. And actually, if you look at, especially in the, over the last few years, young people being political, Generation Y is extremely active, has a very dynamic core and is interested in registering to vote. They're just a lot, politicians don't speak their language. Often they don't address issues that are important to young people. And in addition, it's very difficult to register to vote. I mean, there's a lot of obstacles you have to go through. And that's why mobile presented such a tremendous opportunity. It's because we could be at concerts and the performer could stop the show and say, text me to register to vote. And we had that happen and the response wasn't great. So it wasn't great within, you know, outside of 2 weeks of the registration deadlines. So we learned a lot of lessons, but I think there still is a tremendous opportunity, especially when mobile becomes more common and people understand mobile as a service rather than mobile as a communication device. That's still very unclear in the minds of consumers.
So there's been a recent article in the mobile blogosphere that talks about the mobile phone as encompassing all five medias and being the only tool that encompasses all five medias, meaning print, television, communication, et cetera, et cetera. But it's mobile as opposed to the internet. And Jed, I was wondering if you could comment on, let's go a little bit beyond text here for a second, text messaging. And perhaps your answer will be that text messaging is still important here. But let's talk about some of the other things that you see happening or could happen in the political sphere using all the other mediums that the cell phone can use.
Well, in addition to the strictly political sphere, one of the areas where phones have shown a tremendous amount of promise is in all different other kinds of civic activity and activism and organizing. For example, mobile phones and mobile technology being used to deliver social services to underserved markets, people who don't have access, people, whether it's people receiving social benefits, homeless people, people on parole who wouldn't normally have access to any other kind of direct communication, are now able to stay in contact and get delivered all kinds of services using various aspects of the mobile phone. The one thing that a mobile phone does, and it does it really, really well, and it's what it's designed to do, is make phone calls. So just allowing people to stay in touch using advanced kinds of phone calling technology delivered to the mobile phone. Text, it's a little hard to avoid text because text is probably 99% of the non-phone calling activity going on mobile phones right now. That doesn't mean it's going to be that way forever, but text is obviously incredibly important. But one sort of current use of text that I think is really, really valuable that I alluded to before is text information services. If you're trying to find a specific piece of information, whether the brand of toilet paper you're about to buy is recycled, or whether the or where to go for a crisis intervention, using the text kind of a vertical search, which makes you able to text in a question and get a response right back to a specific service, can be enormously useful. And that's not like, wouldn't say that's sort of a traditional use of one-to-one text messaging. The other kinds of so it's sort of far off for the kinds of things we're talking about our video, but the WAP function of a mobile phone being able to
define WAP.
WAP is the internet protocol for mobile phones, and the WAP functionality of mobile phones right now is very, very useful for delivering somewhat more complex information than the 160 characters on a mobile phone. But I think it's valuable to talk about what's going on right now and what the kinds of things you can do right now and the kinds of services you can provide on mobile phones right now. I would think that probably one of the reasons why I'm just speculating that voting didn't work so well was, and why it is illustrated by the fact that it worked really well 2 weeks before the election, which is, again, this is an incredibly immediate media, and if your call to action suggests something that's sort of far off and that there are other alternatives, whether the person is going to utilize those alternatives or not, but those other kinds of alternatives are present themselves as available, then you're probably going to get less of a compelling response.
Live and learn.
But then you notice that 2 weeks before, when people are like, oh crap, I got to register to vote, then you saw you were getting a great response rate. And that's the kind of thing that you learn, and we've learned over time, that in the call to action, when you're asking someone to do something, it requires the direct immediacy of some benefit to the user.
And it depends who is making the call to action as well. The deliverer of the message was very, very important. When we had somebody who was just tangentially related to politics or registering to vote, like a musician who really didn't have any other connection other than that they were singing to this audience, the responses were really poor. But when we had somebody who had a real connection with the audience, like even same deal, like a DJ who is known to be political at these smaller events, the response was great.
We can take questions from the audience. If you step up to the mic, because it's being podcasted, it makes it easier.
Story about a call to action that happened with our service a couple months ago. I work for a company called Say Now. We develop a mobile voice broadcasting service, and it's used primarily by musicians, primarily hip-hop and R&B stars, to send group voice messages out to their fans when they're on the road. They call in. They say, hey, you know, we're going to be in town. Come see us at the show. One of the guys using our service is this hip-hop and R&B star named Tyrese Gibson. And his album was released in December. And he was a little bit upset because he didn't think that the record label was putting out enough albums in the store. So he called all, I think, like 20,000 of his fans and gave out the number to the head of the record label. And within 5 minutes, that guy was getting 10,000 calls to his cell phone. And they had us shut down the service for a little bit so that, you know, it could clear up.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
But one of the things we're trying to explore is, like, our service is available for everybody, but it's primarily the musicians who are using it. But it can be used by political organizers to get people together. And there's something completely irreplaceable about the power of voice. You know that it's that person talking. It's not his minions. It's not, you know, his peon. So, anyways, I just wanted to tell you guys that story about the potential of voice for communicating.
Which turns into a question. You know, how, you know, the cell phone was originally made for talking.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Voice is the, you know, the most compelling application of a phone. And it should be incorporated whenever possible into programs.
But I want all the cool stuff, too.
I also have just one more announcement. If anybody wants to talk to me later about developing projects, I would love to talk to you guys. Our service is free, so if you have ideas.
Thank you.
Well, what's really exciting about voice also is that the public branch exchange, there's been an open source version of this this software, which allows you basically to programmatically control voice calls. So you could set up just a simple for loop that was calling this person at the record label, you know, on your home computer, and it would just bombard, you know, whoever, you know, somebody's phone with voice calls. And we might run into voice spam issues in the future due to the availability of this open platform. It's called Asterisk. I can't say it because I say it like an American.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah. It's good times. Good times. We've been doing a lot with MMS work. Actually, you've been moving from SMS into MMS, which is picture messaging. One of the things that goes unnoticed is while SMS is, you know, text messaging is available on 99% of the 230 plus million handsets in the U.S., MMS is fast, you know, quickly catching up. 65% of all the phones sold last year had some form of MMS on the handset. So the capability to send voice and pictures and full video up to 30 or 60 seconds is quickly becoming another option available to you. So that's another way to leverage the power of voice and the power of multimedia.
And there's a lot of potential there. I mean, imagine taking a political parody or taking an image of a candidate as he trips or drools on himself and sending it to everyone in an instant. Or imagine taking footage of a protest you are at where, let's say, you know, some of the police officers weren't necessarily behaving in an appropriate way and forwarding it around instantly. I mean, those images are so powerful that there's a lot of potential there for advocacy groups.
Absolutely.
That's a good question.
Questions?
Next question.
Anytime, sorry.
Yeah, I think the way that we started looking at it is it's the hook in. You're at an event, you get somebody to text in, you have their phone number, and you have an open line of communication to that person from that point onwards. And so you can request their email address, You can call them. You can have them call you. You can broadcast voice to that person. So it's just the beginning. I mean, it's not, you can't just do something like just text messaging. You know, there's a whole range of options.
It has to be a part of a holistic campaign.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Doug.
Next question.
I don't think it's on. Just talk loudly.
Yeah.
We'll repeat the question for the podcast.
Text messaging community or the basis of text messaging, and is that going to affect anything? Is that going to change the way that people are using text messaging?
Well, I think culturally, certainly, these shows have very broad reach. Some of them that are very popular, but you see it seeping into the 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. time slots. You see it seeping into the afternoon sort of dead zones on some of the upper number channels and a lot of locations, LA, New York, Chicago. Anything that increases the average consumer's understanding of this is a safe, fun way to interact with anything is good news for all of us at this table. So the way I view shows like that is they're educational tools to let people know that not only can they interact with their what they're watching, but it's safe to send a message in, and this is how you send a message in. So I view them all as just educational.
You know, the use of text messaging in the U.S. is explosive. It doubles, or at least doubles every year. So a lot of what you're seeing is just representative of the fact that more and more and more people are using text messaging.
Well, I'd like to actually ask Roger a question concerning a lot of this, and you talked before about how your model is getting around the carriers. Can you talk about a little bit about that, just very briefly, and how you think it could actually apply outside of maybe the college campus system that you're working on?
Yeah. So what I said, what Rave does is, you know, kind of the theme. One of the themes you're hearing here is that lots of opportunity, but the carriers make it difficult. You know, people like Doug that were formerly at a carrier. Really hated the fact that they missed the internet, you know, and the days before the internet, when all we did is all our communication was through AT&T, you know, they kind of missed the boat on thinking that there's lots of ways people want to communicate. They could never envision a world of IM and you know, Craigslist and all the thousands of ways that people collaborate and organize on the web. So they said, well, we're not going to miss it on the phone, you know, so we're going to be real pricks about things and control things. But they want to kind of control the environment so that they get paid this time. And so, but the one interesting nuance to that is they still make most of their money on voice. And so even though data is growing, they still make money most of them on voice. So what at Rave we do is when we go to a college campus and we say, hey, no one uses your dorm phones anymore. So why don't you, you know, replace that kind of old, tired dorm phone that's wired to the wall with a cell phone? And, you know, we give all the incoming freshmen a choice of these kind of brand new Crazer or whatever the latest phones may be. And, you know, the school gives them to incoming freshmen. Now, the interesting thing related to that is we then take over the phone. So we can do whatever we want with all the capabilities that we're talking about. So we have access to location, presence, billing, all the things that are kind of rich and wonderful that you guys, you know, wish was generally available. We now have access for the thousands of people on this campus. And since it's primarily used for local social coordination, it's a great kind of petri dish to do stuff in. Especially
how,
if we
how
get
do you do that? How do you take over the deck?
Well, it'd be a longer technical answer that that I can go through with, you know, whoever's interested afterward. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you know, think of like instead of seeing the word Sprint on here, you would see our application, and there'd be four kind of buttons that are embedded into the screen, and you can't really ever get out of them. So, you know, sometimes you go into an application, hit the red end button, and then it becomes a phone again, and you have to think about where that application is. You won't have to with a Rave enabled phone. Now, the good thing about that is then the carriers actually want to work with us because we have this giant, you know, group of people that mean revenue to them because it's voice revenue. And so they give us the things that we want. So we kind of turn the tables on them. And so, you know, we're not kind of on deck or off deck. If you guys know what that means, we kind of, you know, create our own deck and create our own destiny.
But how do the carriers let you do that? I mean, what do they have to say about, you know, you taking over the deck? I mean, they're using Sprint Network or T-Mobile Network, correct?
They say, you know, we would love to have those 10,000 kids at UNC. You know, because
so it's because of your deal with UNC that they're saying, yeah, okay, we're going to relax our rules.
Yeah, because once we win a campus, we turn around to the carrier community and say, all right, which one wants this? You know, and they all jump up and down because, again, 90% of their money, you know, is still made on those activations, that voice revenue. And so, you know, we, you know, for a small little company, we have exert a lot of leverage against the carrier community, and then kind of create the environment we need to create. So, for example, we created a platform where if, you know, if the laundry machines are equipped to IP on a campus, which University of Oklahoma has that, a kid built a small app to basically hit his profile so that he could see which machines, you know, washers and dryers are free in his dorm room right now, you know. And that's the kind of like the stuff we all want to do, right? That's the cool stuff we all want to do. And right now the carriers make it difficult. Not to pick on Doug. I mean, carriers have done a lot for us in terms of creating this stuff, which is fairly inexpensive, at least more expensive than it used to be. But, you know, they have a lot of their mission is to serve the masses, you know, and our viewpoint was that this is a community tool. So why not start with the most interesting community, which is college campuses?
Thanks. I got to run my dryers free, actually. So.
I'm sorry, next question. We're going to, if one person on the panel can take this question, each question briefly, so we can move this along because we're running out of time.
Hi. Sorry, my name is Deirdre Malloy. I'm from Chinwag in London. I was interested in the discussion about the use of data and, you know, more advanced services on phones and how that can relate to mobilizing people and social change and so on. In Europe, the big companies like Nokia and so on are producing great handsets that can do everything. And it's the whole focus seems to be on turning the phone into an internet browser and turning the phone into obviously a revenue generator for the big content companies and so on. Or just yet again, trying to turn it into your kind of PDA. And there's a lot of exciting stuff being done, but there's nothing really transformative that I've seen. And where a lot of stuff, interesting stuff is starting to happen, it's more like about that it's giving people an opportunity to change things and change their lives is in Africa, where they're using mobile, like where there's no infrastructure in a lot of these economies because they're, you know, very weak. And people are just using like voice and text farmers to get in touch with suppliers. And, you know, they're creating their own infrastructure through mobile. And that's like a huge thing. And what I'm thinking about is that, do you think we're going to see, you know, lots of very kind of high-tech innovation happening in the Western world and Japan and so on, but some very interesting innovations coming out of developing countries because they're addressing real needs and they're not competing with the internet. People there are not going to have, you know, the companies there are not thinking about how do we get the web on the phone. They'll be thinking about how can we create services locally that are relevant to people.
I think, Roger, can you address that?
I think the question was, I'm not sure what the question was. I mean, I think, you know, in my work in microfinance, what's that?
There'll be a divergence between innovations in the West and the developed world.
So I think it raises a great point. I think one debate since the dawn of wireless is whether it's kind of post-PC or it's an extension of the PC. And, you know, and that's really going to play out in different ways depending on the part of the world you were in. So, you know, when I worked at Grameen or worked with Grameen on this kind of bringing phones to rural villages, it was their only utility. I mean, a lot of these people were solar powering the batteries for those phones. I mean, there was no infrastructure at all. But it was their primary way to kind of, you know, be connected. So I think there's parts of the phone experience that are an extension of the web, and there's parts that are unique and made for mobile. You know, and it I think it'll draw on different parts depending on, you know, which use case you're doing.
Next question.
Hi, I'm Andrew from the Portable Film Festival. We do films for iPods, PSP, and for mobile. Just wondering, you guys are all right at the heart of the mobile world and know what's going on and are close to the carriers. Just interested, how do you think the iPhones affecting and will affect users or the culture of users and also the culture of carriers now that they're going towards a single carrier dependency?
Well, I mean, to play off sort of Roger's example earlier, he has a lot of weight with the carriers in his position with the universities. Apple has a lot more. they were one of the few companies that could go to a singular, the new AT&T, and inform them that they will design the device. They will decide what's on the device. They will decide what music and ringtones run on the device. Because damn it, they're Apple. It might have a battery life of 20 minutes, but they can make that call. And that's really an amazing statement. And I think it points to the possibility of an inflection point in the overall carrier handset relationship in the U.S., where Apple is going to sell these handsets out of their stores. It will be singular dependent here in the States, at least at the outset. That's as much as we know. We don't know if it'll open up to other carriers. That's really a first, and it brings the U.S. closer, one big step closer to the way it is in Europe and Asia-Pac and other countries where the handset is sold completely separately in many instances from the carrier service. We'll have to see. This is an experiment, and Verizon's watching and Sprint's watching and the rest of the guys out there watching, but this is Apple's baby, and it's I think it's a good movement for the industry in general, and it's a real sign of faith on the part of both parties. Apple's referred to the carriers as collectively the four orifices, and multiple carriers went to Apple to try to get them to do this, and it broke down multiple times. So it's amazing that it's happening.
We're running out of time, so I want to get to the four people up there and the question. So if you can ask your question as briefly as possible,
lightning round.
If the answer can be, yeah, let's just do a lightning round.
Yes.
If possible,
no.
And then yes. you can come up here for follow-up.
My question is, I work for a technology company called Convio that provides software for the nonprofit sector, and we help them use the internet for marketing, fundraising, advocacy, et cetera. One of the things we struggle with is when our clients say, hey, we want to go use the mobile world for doing advocacy. One of the challenges is how do you get your constituents' cell phone number in a way that actually there's value for the constituent to give that to you? And then secondly, have you guys seen examples of where something like that has been used to impact legislation?
Lightning answer.
Something like, what was the last part of your question?
Impact legislation.
Impact legislation, yeah. Through the use of mobile advocacy.
We actually work with Convio on our platform, but we can talk about that later. But there are lots of examples where it's been used to, in particular, we've used it to impact legislation. For example, there was a large campaign around the first 100 hours of Congress to get tens of thousands of people to call Congress. During that time using text messaging and then VoIP application to get people to call back and call their congressman over that period of time. And, in terms of what we found is that if the call to action is appropriate, to answer your other question, if the call to action is appropriate, then it's a lot of value for the user to either, sign into mobile or then bring new data into, say, the Convio database.
Thanks. Next question. I suggest you come up to Jed afterwards and talk about that in depth. It's actually pretty fascinating.
I guess my question is to, I don't know, from Rave Wireless, your first name.
Roger.
Roger, sorry for that. What are you seeing in the college constituency about user trends around phones? Because, you know, my, you know, younger sister, all she does is text her friends, you know, and this year I got very few phone calls from my friends on Christmas and Thanksgiving. I get these text messages saying happy, you know, holidays. So you're starting to see these user trends change over different demographics. And so I think that may be a key. But I'd like to see, you know, what before you launched Rave, how are college students using, you know, their phones in ways that they weren't using them or you didn't expect them to use them?
That's a great question.
Lightning answer.
I think that, you know, they call this generation the millennial generation. They think it's as different and as influential on culture as the 60s kind of generation was. So I think they're definitely a generation to watch. I think one kind of macro statement around that is the pressure in their lives to act like adults is more than ever before. If they walk out of a classroom and they don't know something, it's because, you know, no one thought they were worth telling. You know, whereas I walked out of a classroom when I went to college, if I didn't know something, you know, I just didn't hear because I didn't go back to my room and see the post-it or the message. So I think the real difference is that they're expected to act like adults at a very young age and manage a lot more people and a lot more things. So the social pressure is very intense. And because of the fact that everyone's so immediately available and information is so readily shared, it kind of indicates your social status if you don't know something.
Well, can we do a follow-up afterwards? Last question.
Hi, I'm Stacy Zunigan with Unwired Buyer. And I have a question with regard to off-deck, on-deck technologies, how people actually use their phones and how they can go mobile. We've done an application for eBay where the application actually lives on the cloud, and we do outbound calls and let people interact with the eBay via touchtone over a phone call, outbound call. And now we're moving to a place where we want to allow the smaller social networks, not the huge networks, not the MySpaces, not the Facebooks and whatnot, to get to this mobile space as well. But what we've seen is if you're doing on-deck, off-deck data, it's kind of expensive. And so we're going toward a way to do that with voice, so it's free, and trying to directly monetize that. Is there anything that the carriers are doing to support those types of initiatives, since it's minutes we're driving and not data plans? Is there anything that they're looking at to do something that supplements that type of system or those types of programs?
I would say no.
Yeah, I mean, as far as supplements, they're certainly not proactively stopping it, which is a statement in and of itself. I mean, if you look at like Sling Player as an example, but as far as promotion, I do think they're, in my experience, they've been fairly open to all sorts of IVR activities, whether it's inbound or outbound, as long as they know who they are and how they're coming in. They've not enforced to date the same sort of revenue sharing demands on that. But if you went to them and asked, I'd like a piece of those minutes generated, they'd say, good luck. You're lucky we're not blocking you. That's unfortunately going to be the perspective. But the good news is they've sort of stayed hands off on it, and they've allowed most of the IVR players to actively participate. And there's also, you know, Say Now was referenced earlier. There's Zoov. There are several companies, Single Touch, which is another company out there that does IVR pound-based and star-based. These companies are making a lot of progress, but you're finding that IVR is becoming an extension of a lot of what the application suppliers up here do today. We know we touch it as well. So,
okay, well, that's all the time we have. I suggest if you have more questions to come up here, but who wants the party? Everyone? All right, so we have a party going on. All you have to do is text KARMA to 10812. And you'll get the VIP pass. It's the only way to get the password to get into the party. It's tonight at 8 to 12 at KARMA. And Roger has one very important announcement.
Well, is this on? So last thing, I mean, I think one of the things that the phone is used for is for safety. It's a primary tool for kids to keep safe. We built a pretty interesting application if those who are interested, that leverages location-based services on campus. But there is a petition going on just to show that, you know, something like South By cares a lot about how, you know, how we can empower people to keep safe and take control of their lives. So if you could join the petition, all you have to do is to text the word safety to 30644. And all that would do is kind of add you to a list of people that want the kind of carriers to take safety more seriously and how the phone has a role in keeping kids safe on campuses. Right. So fairly easy to do. Normal text messaging rate supply. Thank you for your help.
Thanks, everybody.
Two very good examples. Thank you very much for coming.